due to Allah, and may Allah's peace and blessings be on his last Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and on all those who follow the path of righteousness until the last day. That of removing the veil. In Arabic, the term used is sufur. And the veil, the term commonly used for the veil here in Arabic is hijab, which refers to the covering of the woman in general. Not necessarily covering a particular part of the body, but the covering of a woman in general. Her dress, the dress of the Muslim woman, which should normally cover her from people who have no right to look at her. The Imam spoke about this process, the process of the unveiling of the Muslim woman, as being one of the most dangerous products which the West is selling to the Muslim land. And it is something which has come about in a gradual fashion. It hasn't just taken place all at once. Because we know, even looking back historically, the process of colonization of different parts of the Muslim world in the 16th century, all the way through to the 19th century, 20th century, when the Islamic state, the last of the Islamic states, known as the Ottoman Empire and Uthmani, this was broken up. This represented the last stage in the final breakup of the Muslim world, splintering of its different areas into colonies of the various Western powers. And through this whole process, through this whole period, the unveiling of the Muslim woman did not immediately take place back in the 16th century. We didn't find the women all of a sudden, 400 years ago, just taking off all their clothes. No. Because, historically speaking, if you look even from a Western point of view, the West did not begin exposing their women until really in the 20th century. This is when the actual process of, declothing or unclothing the woman began seriously. In the past, there were styles and fashions which may not have been acceptable, say for example from an Islamic point of view, where fashions may have involved clothes which were tight or see-through or enhancing certain parts of the body, etc. But generally speaking, the women of the past were covered. With the exception, say, of the hair, exposure of the hair. However, in the 20th century, when the West embarked seriously in a program of unclothing the woman, the Western woman, they began selling the same product to the Muslim world. And, as I said, the concepts have entered into the Muslim world in a gradual fashion. This is why today, when you look around in different parts of the Muslim world, you will find mothers covered and daughters uncovered. You can see it is not something which has just happened immediately and so everybody is uncovered. No, you can see it is happening with the generations. With each generation, the new generation of women are becoming more and more unclothed. And, sometimes it begins with showing some hair in some parts of the arms, some parts of the legs, until eventually they end up wearing dresses which are very similar to Western dresses. In some parts of the Muslim world, you can find that the effects have been so deep-rooted that the Muslim woman is indistinguishable from the non-Muslim woman. In many parts of the Muslim world today, she is indistinguishable. In some places, for example, this is like Indonesia, in certain parts of Malaysia and Philippines, you will find that the Muslim woman will have a dress that she wears when she goes in the masjid. When she's outside in the street, she looks like the non-Muslim. But when she reaches the door of the masjid, she will have a bag with a hijab that she will put on when she goes to pray in the masjid. But outside of the masjid, she looks the same as the non-Muslim woman. And of course, the imam is addressing the situation here in particular, because this is one of the countries where the Muslim women are the most covered. Right? This is sort of like the last bastion, you could say, of the veil. So the attack is coming here, you know, it is being concentrated here, because if it can be broken at the core, you know, the place which is looked at as being like the center of the Muslim world, then it means that the effort, what they call the fundamentalist effort to try to bring the people in other parts, you know, there's movements developing in various parts of the Muslim world to bring Muslims back to the correct practice, you know, if they can break, they can undermine the program here in the center of the Muslim world, then that will undercut the effort which is taking place in the outlying parts of the Muslim world. And that program of unveiling is one in which the media plays a major role. The media, whether it's in the form of cinemas, whether it is in the form of videos, magazines, newspapers, whatever, all of the various forms of the media play a major role in promoting the Western mode of dress, the Western approach to dress, and by people in this part of the world accepting this aspect of media, even with the censorship, because there is censorship, but censorship of that which is obviously sexual. I mean, like kissing or hugging and these type of things, this is what you find censored. But the actual woman herself is not censored. The woman is still the Western woman on the television, in the magazines, you know, Sayyidati or various magazines coming from different parts of the world, you know, in the videos. I mean, though it is cleaned up, as I said, from a sexual point of view, in terms of the woman and the exposure of the woman, it is still there. So it means then that this is entering into the homes. People are watching these. And we can see an effect in the society, even from a point of view of the different kinds of crimes which are prevalent now. You see, you can see, if you watched over the period of the last 15 years, the types of crimes which have taken place in the society, for which people are being punished, being executed, or hands cut off, or whatever, you know, different crimes, you can see the quality of the crimes changing. The type of crimes that were around 15 years ago are slightly different from the crimes that are around today. The crimes that you're seeing showing up today are ones which you see glorified in the videos coming from the West. You see, the certain kinds of crimes, kidnapping, you know, these types of, you know, armed robbery and gangs, you know, drug dealers and this type of thing, this type of crimes now arising in these times, which didn't exist 3 years ago. And this is a direct result of the media promotion of Western values, Western society, because what happens is that the various movies and videos which come from the West, they glorify the drug dealer. They glorify, you know, various crimes. This criminal was able to plan things so well, he was able to escape without being caught. You know, there's a glorification of crime. So that has, you can see a practical effect on the quality of the types of crimes which have taken place in the society here. We can have no doubt that it has also affected other aspects of the society. That's just one very obvious aspect we see. But it has affected other aspects too, including the dress of the Muslim female. So the Imam was calling people to be aware of what is taking place, because the types of dresses that are being worn now by women, see, though women here are still maintaining the outer covering, the style of dress that they are now wearing when they have their gatherings, women gatherings. See, these are now Western style dresses. Low cut necks, tight, you know, exposing their shapes, you know, see-through, following the Western styles exactly. This is a part of that process. And also, even the outer garment, the abaya. If you go back 15 years ago, the abaya, the outer garment which was worn, you had a choice between a cheap one, which was made from nylon or some cotton artificial mix, or silk, expensive. Your choice was, on the outside, they both look virtually the same. The only difference was in the quality of the material. However, 15 years have passed. And now when you look at the choices that a person has in terms of for a woman to choose an abaya, you've got all kinds of designs, and the abayas have become so fancy, many of them see-through and so-so in and of themselves, that they become a form of beauty. They become a form of attraction. They become like the inner dresses that they were wearing before. You see. So this is a reality which the people are living with. And what we have to understand from an Islamic perspective is that dress has different purposes. The primary purpose from an Islamic point of view is to cover the awra, or the private part, to cover one's private part. This is the primary reason for dress. Number one, covering the private part. The private part for a woman is different from the private part for a man. The primary reason is the covering of the private part. Secondary reason is to protect one from the elements, from heat or cold. The secondary reason why people were originally wearing things on their head, colors that they use, white to reflect the sunlight where it is very hot, you know, different qualities of material depending on the elements, on the climate. Right? So secondary reason, to protect one from the elements. Third reason, for beautification. The third reason is for beautification. And we all have a desire to be beautiful. And Allah has put that desire in us, and naturally that becomes a part of the purpose of dress. However, there are limits which have been set by the divine law as to how one may beautify oneself. So we of course have to stay within the limits of beautification. And women, Allah has put this quality of desire for beautification, which may be called the peacock complex. You know, peacock is that bird with the very fancy feathers, you know, it walks and it opens up all its feathers. You've seen them in the museum, or some of you have them in your country, you know. It likes to show. This is the nature of women. It's even stronger than the man. And this has a reason. This is for that attraction, so that marriage may take place, families may be established in the society. Allah has created them with that even stronger desire. So even certain allowances in terms of beautification, you know, are given to women for that fulfillment of that natural desire, which has a correct and valid purpose for human society, but that it should stay within the bounds as have been set by Islamic law. So we said first reason was covering the private part. Second reason was protection from the elements. Third reason was for beautification. Right? This is how it is according to the Islamic scheme of things. 1, 2, 3. In the West, it's the opposite. First reason is beautification. First reason is beautification. Second reason is protection from the elements. And third reason is covering one's private part. It's the opposite. How do we know this? Because in the dead of winter, in the West,
North America, in England, Europe, when, you know, the temperature is zero and below zero, you will find women wearing miniskirts. Right? Obviously, the miniskirt is not covering the aura. Miniskirt is now exposing as much of her body as she can. What stops her and makes her at least have to expose some is to protect her from the elements. The third purpose is that of covering one's aura. So their whole approach is a different approach altogether. Their goal in terms of dress is exposure. This is why you see, for example, in the Olympics. Now, in the newspapers here, they even had to censor out the dress for the men, male runners. They now have track suits which look like they're so spread on them that, you know, the private parts are being exposed right there. So you see, you saw the pictures in the newspapers from the Olympics where they had to come to and put a kind of a veil over this region of the body where the person, you know, where the runners, how the runners were dressed. Of course, women, they couldn't show them at all. Yeah. Because the women had, since years back, you know, were exposing themselves so much that they couldn't be shown. Okay. So we can see that it is reaching all segments of the society. And what you find along with this, when you study the West, over the past 50 years, where the dress of the woman has been removed piece by piece, what's there is getting smaller and smaller. What you find is that there has been a rise in rape, a rise in the molestation of women. So much so that last year, according to the Bureau of Statistics, Criminal Statistics in America, the numbers of reported rapes had crossed the 100,000 mark. 100,000 reported rapes in a year. And they said that the actual number was probably 7 to 10 times that great, because most women are shy and afraid to report the rape. There's only a small percentage, 1 in 7 or 1 in 10, that actually report the rape. So you're talking about a very serious situation. A situation right now where in the Navy, they're having major trials going on now for a number of officers in the Navy because they had a party. After the Gulf War, U.S. Navy, they had a party. Big naval officers and female naval officers were also invited. It was a mixed party. And what they did was, in a hotel, the men lined up in the hallway, in the hall of the, you know, where the rooms are in the hotel. They formed two lines, one on either side of the hall, and they forced the women to run through between the men. And the men, as the women were running through, the men were grabbing at them, pulling off their clothes, fondling them, so on. These are female officers in the Navy. So now these male officers are on trial. They have been kicked out of the Navy for these crimes. They did a survey in the Army. They found that the women, from a corporal all the way to the female general, stated as one that they were being harassed by the males. U.S. Army. And this is throughout the society. The harassment of the female is on the increase. The more that the woman's clothes is taken off, the more she's being harassed. It's like there's a direct relationship there. So we can see that Islamic societies, where emphasis is placed on the veiling of the woman, the protection of the woman, because that veiling is for whose purpose? For the protection of the woman. We can see that in these places, the crimes against women are much less, but they are starting to increase as the veiling is being decreased. And we have to keep in mind, because, you know, oftentimes Western elements or the West looks at the veiling of the woman, the Muslim woman, as oppression. This is oppression of the woman. This is why they call for the unveiling under the heading of women's liberation, the liberating of the woman. The covered woman is an oppressed woman. The uncovered woman is a liberated woman. These are the headings that they put out, because of course everybody likes the idea of liberation. We should be free. So this is an attractive title that they're calling it under. But the fact is that the so-called liberated woman of the West, you can see what's happening to her. She's being, you know, she's under siege in America, in the West. She's under siege, being raped in epidemic numbers, harassed in all of her job situations. Is this freedom? Is that the kind of freedom that we want for our mothers or wives or daughters, sisters? No, we don't want that kind of freedom. That kind of freedom we don't need. Nobody needs that. But this is the heading in which it is coming. But the fact is that the veiling of the Muslim woman is not for the oppression of that woman at all. It is for the protection of the woman. Because Islam looks at, when it looks at a society, it looks at the needs of the members of the society, realistically speaking. It doesn't stand up and say, the man and the women are equal. Whatever a man has, a woman should have, they're equal in all spheres. No. Because the reality is that on a very basic physical level, they're not equal. Men are stronger than women, in general. I'm not saying that you will not find some woman who's strong, who could beat up some of these guys here, right? You small people, right? You get some American woman, or, you know, 6 feet, they could take you guys to the cleaners. True. If you take this kind of relationship, but in general, in all given societies where people are generally shorter, smaller, the men will be stronger than the women there. And where people are taller, bigger, the men are stronger than the women there also. So this is just the way God has made man and woman, that men are stronger than women. This is biological. The reality is that we cannot separate the biological from the psychological. These things are interrelated. Your physical being will affect your mental state. When you get sick physically, you can get down mentally. You know, there's an interrelation. There is something happening between the two. You can mentally feel good. That can improve your physical situation too. You know, there is an interplay there. So, the fact that males are stronger than females, Islam takes that into account, and it puts the males in a position of responsibility and leadership. Responsibility, leadership, and so it becomes their role now as the leaders, the responsible ones, to look after the society. To look after the weaker members of the society, beginning with the women and the children. These are the two weaker elements in the society. Women have to be protected, because if men and women are put on an equal footing, the man being stronger than the woman will take advantage of the woman. That is the nature of the man. So therefore, you have separation in the Islamic society. Part of the veiling of the Muslim woman, it involves separation. As I said, it's not all just the thing in terms of abaya, outer covering. No, it has also to do with the actual separation of the women out from the men. Men and women are not mixing freely in the society for the protection of the women. When a woman speaks to a man whom she's not married to, who is not her direct relative, then she is commanded to speak to him in a straight a normal voice. Not to talk to him in a different voice. A voice which is flirtatious. You know, when a woman talks to another woman, she talks on a particular level. If a man is involved, then that quality of her voice changes. Same thing with a man. When a man talks to another man, he talks on a level. When he talks to a woman, his voice. Now, we are commanded to control that voice, to make sure that the voice stays on that normal, even keel. To prevent, this is part of the veiling, part of the separation. Control for the protection, he said, of the Muslim female. And following that, naturally, the protection of the children. Because if a woman is raped and a child is born, the child suffers. The woman suffers and the child suffers. So protection of women is also protection of the children. So the Islamic society puts great emphasis on the veiling of the woman for her protection in the society. The Imam went on to advise family, the male particular, called the guardian, that it is their duty to prevent their women from wearing dresses which are prohibited. The haram styles of dresses, they should prevent. It is their duty. Allah will ask them on the day of judgment why their wife, sister, daughter, mother dressed in the fashion that they dress. They will have to answer first and foremost. It doesn't mean that the women will not answer. Of course, they will have to stand before Allah and answer for the choice that they made. But the first and primary responsibility is placed on the shoulders of the man, because he is the head of the household. He is the leader. So he encouraged the guardian, the male, to prevent the women from going out in dresses which are haram, going out in dresses which are fancy, which are going to attract people, and going out perfumed. Going out perfumed. Because the Prophet had said, a woman who goes out of her home wearing perfume which is detectable. There are certain types of perfume which is so faint you can't smell it. So this is allowable. But once she puts on a type which when she walks by you can smell her, then the Prophet ﷺ described her as being a fornicator. The woman who comes out wearing perfume in that fashion is a fornicator, because she is calling people. When a woman walks by, you smell that smell, it causes your head to turn and, you know, to look and to think, and she is calling you to corruption. So Muslim women are not allowed to go out perfumed. In the privacy of their home, for the sake of their husband, sure, they can wear the kind of perfume which is sweet-smelling, whatever, in their home. Because there, the kind of attention that they will get is halal. It's part of marriage, it's part of the home. The second point that the Imam advised was that men should be examples themselves. They should be examples in the sense that for them to sit and watch videos or movies with their women, where the women are unclothed, what are they telling? What is the message that they're giving their women? It's very contradictory for a man to be telling his woman, cover yourself up, but then he's sitting down watching women who are uncovered. It's contradictory. Because if he sits there watching along with the women of his family, they are getting the message from him that this is okay. This is alright. This is what he likes. So he has to be the first example. He has to control the media in his own home. And what may be pleasing to him may in fact be haram, or at least calling to haram. So he should control the environment of his home. He has to be the first example. The third point he mentioned was based on a hadith in which he talked about two groups of people would be in hell. One of them was a group of women whom the Prophet ﷺ described as being covered yet naked. They were covered yet naked. That is, the type of clothes they were wearing were see-through or tight-fitting to expose what was underneath, or was cut open so they're exposing different parts of their body. You know, could be wearing a long dress with a big slit up the side or a slit up the back, and these kind of dresses, you know. The fourth point, I mean, what that is saying is that, you know, we have to be conscious of what it means to be properly dressed as a Muslim woman. males have that responsibility of maintaining what is acceptable dress. The fourth point is that the cover that the woman wears when she goes out should not be a source of attraction in and of itself. Because of that, black male is not to say that black is the only cover that a woman may wear as an outer garment. She may wear other colors. However, it should not be flashy, fancy colors which are going to call attention to herself. It should be what we call sober colors. Ones which are, you know, single colored or, you know, or darkish type colors. Ones which are not bright, sparkling, you know, with gold thread and silver thread and rhinestones on it. It's not to say that black is the only cover that a woman may wear as an outer garment. She may wear other colors. However, it should not be flashy, fancy colors which are going to call attention to herself. It should be what we call sober colors. Ones which are, you know, single colored or, you know, or darkish type colors. Ones which are not bright, sparkling, you know, with gold thread and silver thread and rhinestones on it, sparkling and catching people's eyes. No, it should be simple, plain type of dress. This is the purpose. The outer covering is not, is to cover, not to call attention to dissuade people from looking at. You know, to discourage people from looking. And you know what you're going to find for us, most of us being from Western societies, what you find is that when a woman starts to dress in an Islamic fashion, you will find that the men start to treat her differently. If she starts to dress in a proper Islamic fashion, I don't mean like half, but properly Islamic, you will find that the men will start to treat her differently. I know a number of women, you know, have told me from America, you know, how by putting on Islamic dress, you know, getting on a bus, for example, men would get up and offer their seats. Men who would normally be harassing women and outside were getting up now and offering them a seat. But people would ask, you know, what order of the nuns are you from? You know, they assume that they must be, you know, this is the attitude. I mean, they obviously, they feel these people are somehow holy and pure and, you know, what we have to, you know, back off. This is the reality. So there is definitely a good and positive effect when women of the West begin to cover themselves Islamically. The other point that we mentioned was that it is important that the covering be understood from a point of faith. A point of faith and worship, and not a point of cultural habit. That is, that a woman understands that covering herself is directly related to believing in Allah. It's a part of believing in Allah. She herself has to be educated in the sense of knowing who she is, who Allah is, what her duties to Allah are, and to understand that this is a part of her duty to Allah. So for the correct covering, the Islamic covering, the hijab, the veiling of the Muslim woman, to take place properly in Muslim society, the Muslim woman has to be educated. You see, what situation where you have in the Muslim world now where Muslim women in general are ignorant. They don't know, you know, they don't have knowledge of the religion or of the dunya either. And in fact, they do end up, when you actually look at them practically speaking, many of them are in a state of oppression. The males taking full advantage of them. You have some countries where women are prohibited from even going to the masjid. They're almost Muslims. Where they will stop women from going, they will not allow them into the masjid. So, the veiling has to be linked with the education of the Muslim woman. She has to be educated first and foremost concerning her deen, her religion, to know who she is, know who Allah is, why she was created, what are her duties to Allah. She must be clear on this. And then she is educated to know, to understand that the veiling is a part of her duty to Allah. It is for her protection, so she understands the rationale and the reason practically, socially speaking, but it is also primarily a duty to Allah, so that when she wears the garb of the Muslim woman, she wears it believing that she's worshipping Allah by doing so. By doing so, this is an act of worship, ibadah. This has to be understood. So, when she does so, then you will not be able to get that woman to remove that dress. It will be like a woman who understands the 5 times daily prayer and getting her to stop praying. No. She knows it's her duty to Allah in the same way. With her dress, she knows it's her duty to Allah. You're not going to get her. You don't have to worry about her unclothing herself. However, the woman who doesn't have this knowledge, who is wearing it because of the pressure of the society around her, it's a cultural practice to wear this garment. Then, when she gets on a plane going to America, you see the phenomenon all of us see when we get on planes leaving Saudi Arabia, right? So all these women are getting on all covered in black. As soon as they get on there, the plane takes off, it leaves the ground, you see them going into the bathrooms, coming out, everything is taken out. They're looking just like women of the West. And the opposite too. We see all these Western women coming on the plane, coming back to Saudi Arabia, and as soon as the pilot announces, you know, we'll be landing in Riyadh or in Jeddah in the next 10 minutes, you see all these women going to the bathrooms and coming back out all covered up. This is a practice. This veiling has nothing to do with religious consciousness at all. This is just culture. You see, and this is what we don't want. Because that veil is the one that can easily be removed. And that is the veil which was removed in many parts of the Muslim world. Because the Muslim woman was ignorant, the Muslim man himself was ignorant, did not educate his woman, then the process of unveiling of the woman was a relatively easy process. In the second part of the khutbah, the Imam outlined the various arguments, some of the various arguments used by those scholars who consider that a woman should be covered from head to toe, including the face and the hands. There are arguments held by other scholars that the woman should be covered from the head to the toe, except for the face and hands, if she wishes. You may read these arguments. There's a book by Sheikh Maududi, Maulana Maududi, called Purda and the Woman in Islam, in which he gives the arguments for the covering of the woman totally, including her face. That it is compulsory. And there is a booklet available on the market also called The Muslim Woman's Dress in Islam by Abu Bilal Mustafa al-Kennedy, wherein he outlines the arguments of those scholars who hold that the woman should cover everything compulsory with the exception of the face and hands. That this is voluntary on her part. Those of you who want to go deeper into this, to understand it, it'd be good for you to read both of these books and discuss with other people, and then you come to the conclusion for yourself what is best for you and your family. And he closed with a verse from the Quran wherein Allah says to us,
you know, all you who believe, protect yourselves and your families from the fire. This is the duty that we have for ourselves, to protect ourselves and our families from the fire. We do so by recognizing our responsibilities to Allah, by educating our women, to understanding that the veiling is an act of worship and not a cultural practice, that we insist where necessary, because you may explain to a woman, have her educated, and she may still feel that she wants to go out in a fashion which is not acceptable Islamically, and males being in a position of authority now have the responsibility to insist that they do not do so. And as one of the scholars had said, that you can judge the state of Islam of a people by the dress of their women. You can judge the state of the Islam of a people by the dress of their women. The overall consciousness of Islam in a society will be exposed by the state of dress of the women of that society. Where the women are naked, the whole society is ignorant of Islam. Doesn't mean there are not scholars amongst them now, but the general state of consciousness of what is Islam, the implementation of Islamic principles, five times daily prayer and all the different things, fasting, etc., it means it's on the lowest of levels. The more covered the women is, the higher the level of Islamic consciousness in the society. That's just a practical measure. And those of us who are coming from different countries, we can judge. We can look in our societies and know the realities of this statement. This statement is a good yardstick for us to judge and to understand the state of our societies. So, in recapping, I'd just like to remind you that the West is selling itself on the rest of the world, selling its products. Much of those products are corrupt. Some are beneficial. It is the duty of Muslims to make a distinction between that which is useful and that which is destructive. Take what is useful and leave the rest. Among the most destructive products of the West is the unveiling or the unclothing of the woman, promoted through the media and through all the various means. The Western concept of dress is first and foremost for promotion of beauty. The Islamic concept is first and foremost to cover the private parts. We have to be clear on the differences in approach and establish the correct Islamic approach towards dress, not only for the female but also for the male. Usually these talks center and concentrate on the female because they are the ones whose exposure creates, say, the greatest harm in the society, because they're the weaker members of society, more easily attacked. You don't really hear about men being raped. I mean, maybe it happens someplace, but that's not the usual process. If a man takes off more and more of his clothes, he's not being raped. But women, yes. However, the male example should be one not only of education and advice, etc., but the males themselves should dress in keeping with the Islamic principles of dress. Of course, it's not acceptable for a man to be wearing clothes which exposes his private parts, see-through or super tight, whatever. In fact, to wear tight pants, for example, which when you stand up, you can see it hugging a man's behind and his front, where his private parts are exposed, you know, under normal circumstances. That kind of dress is unacceptable. It's haram. Prayer is not acceptable in that dress, because one of the conditions for the acceptability of prayer is covering one's private. So the Muslim male should be wearing loose clothing, not in the form of pants, or not to say everybody has to wear a thob, you know, a long garment, no. It can be shirt and pants, so and so, but the pants should be so loose as to not expose, under normal circumstances, the privates. It should be loose. Or the top should come down and cover that area. You know, that's even better. This is why you find in the traditional dress of Muslims around the world, where they wear pants and a top, usually the top comes down, you know, someplace around their knees to cover this area. This is the modesty of the Muslim man. You know, this is something that we should also keep in mind. And that it is the responsibility of the male, being the head of the family, to ensure that their females stay within the bounds of Islam. In their dress, also in the fact that they may not go out in a state which is perfumed, which is calling to themselves. And perhaps the most important of all, that we educate our women so that they understand that the veiling is an act of worship. It has to do with their duty to Allah, first and foremost. Then we'll also let them understand that it is for their own protection. That they should be able to grasp this, understand this, to explain it to non-Muslim women who want to expose themselves and wonder why Muslim women are obliged to dress in this fashion. They should understand it so they can explain. They should know it for themselves, first and foremost, to be convinced. And they should be able also to explain it to others. That's basically the contents of the khutbah. If anybody would like now to ask any questions concerning female dress in Islam, first and foremost, you know, and then we can go on to general questions. You're pointing at somebody?
Voilà. Just a comment, which was kind of emphasizing your last point about the men. As the khutbah and most of the Bilal's comments were directed towards the woman, his last comments again came back to the man, emphasizing that the man really has the lead in the situation. He made an earlier analogy of the peacock effect. I just wanted to say that the peacock effect, of course, we know on most of the birds, what have you. It's the male who has the plumage. It's the male who's colorful. It's the male who's beautiful. And he uses his beauty to attract the woman. And one of the things that I've noticed recently, 10, 15 years, is that the man has become more conscious of his dress. He's no longer the drab dresser waiting to be attracted by a woman, but rather he's doing all he can to keep in style with his dress, with his haircut, with his sunglasses, with his watch, what have you. And it goes right back to the point of a lot of emphasis towards the end. It's the man who, as the head of his family, or that, you know, if he's single, just in clothing himself, who must set the tone, be it the video or the media that comes into the home or not. It's his own style, his own dress, his own behavior, and as again, as Bilal pointed out towards the end, his own dress, very, very important. You find many, many times I have seen here in this society where the woman who is uncovered, her husband is also wearing the tight-fitting clothes. He's more inclined towards the Western mold of dress. Even if, as Bilal pointed out, he's wearing pants, he tends to wear the pants with a tucked-in shirt, the pants are tight. His woman, therefore, is quite comfortable wearing something loose. I think we here as brothers, and to tell our brothers and our fathers, what have you, that really we have a big, big onus to keep in mind our own responsibilities about ourselves, first of all, and then towards our wives, our mothers, and our daughters.
Jazakum Allah khairan.
What about the wearing of shorts underneath the clothes? Many men seem to fashion themselves by publicly wearing shorts underneath their clothes, the long clothes.
But if the clothes is see-through, you see, this is where the issue comes. If the clothes is not see-through, you can wear anything you want underneath it. Now, when they're wearing see-through, thobes, you know, out this long garment, because it's the same. Even the Western effect has come into the thobe itself, even the, you know, which normally is covering the body. Now you have materials which are see-through. So you may find some of the young men wearing these thobes which are so see-through, you can see their skin, see underneath what they're dressed with. And if they're wearing, you know, jockey shirts or some kind of, you know, bikini-type shirts, of course, this is haram now. You're entering into the area of haram. That if they're wearing something which happens, because you may find in some societies, because of the heat and the humidity, you find in some other societies where the people will wear materials which are see-through, that they wear something underneath it which covers properly the private areas.
What can you say about this fashion modeling? Women displaying their bodies. When somebody who is supposed to represent Islamic country is participating also, for example, the first of all, it's not allowed. What can you say about it? Is police allowed or exposed?
Yes, you know, when we're dealing with, we could say, fashion contests or beauty contests, or these type of contests, where women are put on display, showing off styles or whatever, you know, these type of things are prohibited in general society. If women, for example, put on a fashion show for other women alone, this is something acceptable, as long as the dress is also acceptable. But for women to parade themselves, you know, for a group of men, judges, you know, who are going to judge them according to their beauty, etc., this is prohibited in Islamic society, you know. And where we find representatives of government, etc., where the women are in this fashion, this is something which tells us something about the Islamic quality of that government in and of itself. You know, there was just in the newspapers, for example, in Malaysia, where the Malaysian government has ordered all of its women, who are women who are wives of ambassadors or whatever, to shake the hands of men. This is in the newspaper. They were ordered to shake the hands of men. Why? Because an Islamic consciousness was developing in the country. People became aware of the fact that Islamically a woman should not be shaking the hands of men, except for her husband or her brother, you know, within her immediate family, but just shaking anybody's hand, which is a Western custom, you know. They had started stopping doing this. So the government, to stop this wave which was developing, has ordered the people in its government services that the women must shake the hands of men. When they go, their representatives, they must do so. This is telling me something.
Which point of view do you like? Okay, that's a more dirty view, or the other one, the whole body is covered except the patient?
Well, it's not important which one I advocate. As I said, it is better for you to read and judge for yourself. I said, there's evidence from both sides. You know, it is better for you to judge for yourself, because your judgment should not be based on what I chose. It should be based on what...
What do you think?
No. No, but ultimately you have to make the decision for yourself. And I would prefer not to prejudice that decision by giving you my own personal opinion. That's why I suggested to you to read the arguments of both sides and come to your own conclusion. Well, you have to choose. Actually, they both are not compatible. Huh? Both opinions are not compatible in the sense that one says that it is compulsory for a woman to cover her face. In other words, if she doesn't cover her face, she is a sinner. The other one says it is recommended for her to cover her face. So if she does not cover her face, she is not a sinner. So see, these two views are not compatible. Right? So as I said, one needs to read, research for themselves, and come to their own conclusions.
Could you give us your comment regarding men wearing their Muda shorts, especially the printed ones, during the Cold War? Those created in Spain, their parading, and you can see shorts men wearing Bermuda shorts.
Okay, technically speaking, Bermuda shorts, that are shorts which go down to one's knees, that are loose, these are allowable. Technically speaking, they are allowable. You know? To the knee. Because what is what should be covered is what is between the knee and the navel. The knee itself is not aura or a private part, nor is the navel in and of itself. But what is between, immediately below the navel to immediately above the knee. This is the area that is required to be covered. Right? According to the opinion of the majority of scholars. You do have a minority who do hold that what has to be covered actually is just the actual private parts themselves. You do have a minority who do hold this position also. I just want you to be aware of that. However, the evidence seems to support the majority position that it really is between the navel and the knee. So if a man wears Bermuda shorts, which is loose, yeah, coming to the knee, then it is acceptable Islamically speaking. Right, and if it is colorful, you see, if a man wears colorful clothing in Islamic context, it is not in and of itself prohibited. We will say, Islamically speaking, it's not encouraged in the sense of modesty, in the general principles of modesty, but it would not be considered sinful for a man to wear, you know, colorful pants.
In a society where Muslims are united for this type of activity, there is a dilemma for Muslim women that is, to comply with Islamic duty of wearing hijab, the more they are being harassed or the more they are being discriminated against women, especially the child, or especially saving them with Muslim non-Muslim people, say for instance the children, who are required to have uniform in school, but they are so adamant to using the uniform or to wear their own uniform. So what should
Well, this is the case of Muslim minorities. You know, it's in the Philippines, Sri Lanka, you know, wherever. In India, in America, wherever Muslims are in a minority, where the rule of the country is non-Islamic rule, with the Western non-Islamic values, naturally they will try to impose these values on the society as a whole. Where the community is weak, people are scattered, then the pressures are greater. A woman, she accepts Islam here. She goes back home to the Philippines. She has some children. She has to divorce her husband because he wouldn't accept Islam. Now she has to get a job. She goes, job interview. Each time she goes, she finds that they want her to take her scarf off. She cannot get a job wearing a scarf. Now she has to feed her children. In that circumstance, where the community is so weak that it cannot provide protection for that woman, of course, she is now forced. We cannot tell her, listen sister, you cannot take your scarf off. Right? She does what she has to do to survive. Right? But it doesn't mean that because she takes her scarf off, this also means now she'll start to wear tight dresses and mini skirts and, you know, goes all the way. No. If she can get the job by just taking her scarf off, okay, that, you know, the point is that in situations of dire necessity, you're allowed to do what is just enough to maintain your survival, you know, to keep you alive, keep you and your family alive. You're not then, it's not like you just open the door and say, okay, everything now becomes halal to you, right? So, I mean, the woman would have to understand that. But this now reflects back on the Muslim community.